पाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोतर श्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस अभय चरणारविंद भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की श्रीमद भगवद गीता की ताई गौर प्रेमानंदे ओम ज्ञानतिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकाय चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी इति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो आई एम ग्रेटफुल टू बी हियर विद ऑल ऑफ यू टुडे एंड टुडे विल स्पीक ऑन द लास्ट 5 वर्सेस ऑफ द भगवद गीता। सो विल टॉक अबाउट अप्रिशिएटिंग द भगवद गीता फ्रॉम संजय's पर्सपेक्टिव। So, another way of titling this, what's so great about the Bhagavad Gita? So, I'll use an acronym GREAT, G-R-E-A-T, which will describe the 5 verses spoken by Sanjay. So, the Bhagavad Gita itself has 700 verses and is primarily a conversation between Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna asks, over the course of these 18 chapters, Arjuna asks 17 different questions and Krishna answers those questions. And the Krishna Arjuna conversation ends by 18.73. 1872 is the last verse that Krishna speaks. And 1873 is the last verse that Arjuna speaks. And Arjuna says, Krishna asks, have you heard clearly? Have you understood? Arjuna says, I understood. I become calm. I become confident. And that's where the Gita could have ended. But the Gita contains five more verses, which are what are spoken by Sanjay. So we'll look at each of these five verses and we'll try to focus on one theme from each of these verses, which will help us appreciate the speciality of the Bhagavad Gita. So let's look at these verses one by one. Let's try to recite it. So I'll tell the meaning first and then we'll recite it. And then we'll discuss the verse. And after discussing the verse, we'll try to recite it once again. And like that, I'll try to do about 7 minutes each verse. And we'll complete in the 35-40 minutes. And we can have one or two questions at the end. So here, Sanjay is speaking. Ityaham, in this way, I have Vasudevasya, Parthasya cha Mahatmana. So these two souls, Vasudev, that is Krishna, and Partha is Arjuna. In this way, between these two souls, Vasudev and Partha. And what about them? Mahatmanaha. They are both great souls. Mahatma is singular. Mahatmanaha is plural. So he's referring, in between these two great souls, samvadam, this discussion, this conversation, this dialogue, idam ashrausham, ashrausham, I have heard. In this way, I have heard this conversation between these two great souls, ashrausham. And adbhutam romaharshanam, he is describing what is the nature of this conversation. First he says it was between two great souls, but it is also adbhutam, it is wonderful. And romaharshanam, how wonderful. The wonderful is often a very overused adjective. Prasad is wonderful, kirtan is wonderful, devotees are wonderful, temple is wonderful, life is wonderful. Well, okay, it just sometimes the word becomes meaningless because of overuse. What is it? It's so wonderful, adbhutam romaharshanam. Roma refers to hair. My hairs are standing up in ecstasy. So it's extremely thrilling, he's saying. So he starts by appreciating the Bhagavad Gita in this verse. So let's try to recite it. We'll recite only once and responsively. Ityaham Vasudevasya,
Ityaham Vasudevasya,
Parthasya cha Mahatmanaha,
Parthasya cha Mahatmanaha,
Samvadamimam Ashrausham,
Samvadamimam Ashrausham,
Adbhutam Romaharshanam. So I'll focus on one word, Mahatmanaha. It is understood that Krishna is Mahatma. Atma means soul. Maha means great. So Mahatma is a great soul. Now literally, Krishna as God is the greatest being. So he is Mahatma. But all the Bhagavad Gita has itself described and the Upanishads also echo that the soul is extremely tiny. It is so small that it is immeasurable, aprameyam. So why would such a tiny soul be referred to as Mahatma? It is that Krishna has also used this word Mahatma earlier. In the 7th chapter, 19th verse he uses it. And 9th chapter, 14th verse he uses it. For example, Bahunam Janmanam Ante Jnanavan Mam Prapadate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sa Mahatma Sudurlabhaha. Also in 940, Satatam Kirtayantoma Yatantascha Drudavataha Namashyantascha Maam Bhaktya. Sorry, 9.30. Mahatmanastu Maam Partha Daivim Prakriti Maashrataha Vajantyananya Manaso Gyatva Bhutadi Maumve. So the idea is, physically or metaphysically, whichever, the soul is not physical, so we can say metaphysically, the soul is very small. So how can a small soul become a great soul? So here it is saying this is a conversation between Mahatmas. That means Sanjay is considering it is not only Krishna who is a Mahatma. It is Arjuna is also a Mahatma. So what makes a soul a big soul? It is actually their vision of life. It is their understanding of the meaning and purpose of life. What do they see their life as meant for? That can make a person's life very small. The person's conception of life is what? Okay, I just want to enjoy. I eat, I drink, and be merry, as some people say. Well, okay, at the end of your life, what is the biggest achievement? Well, for 75 years, you digested food every day. What else did you do with your life? So what happens is, what makes a soul great is their understanding of the purpose of life. So Arjuna at the start of the Gita had a small conception. He says, I am on this side of the Pandavas, they are on the side of the Kauravas, and I have to fight against them. And should I fight against them? By fighting we will gain a kingdom. But in gaining the kingdom, I lose my relatives. So, should I fight or not fight? Is losing one's relatives worth gaining a kingdom? See, maybe it is not. He was confused. But Krishna expanded Arjuna's vision. Says, this war is not just about saving your relatives or gaining a kingdom for yourself. This war is meant to establish the rule of virtue in the world. To establish a social order that will be conducive for spiritual well-being. So Krishna expanded Arjuna's vision to understand that his life, his choices, his activities were meant for something far bigger than himself. And that is what the Bhagavad Gita can do for all of us. That the Bhagavad Gita's message helps us all to expand our understanding of life, our understanding of what my life is meant for. Within the materialistic conception, life is ultimately meaningless. We are just some bags of protoplasm who have somehow come up alive. We flap around for some time and we may be hit by a bang or we may be bit by a bug and we collapse. It's over. So is life that meaningless? Is life not meant for something more? No, life is meant for survival, the survival of the fittest. Now Prabhupada said, okay, we talk about survival of the fittest, but even the fittest don't survive. He said, nobody survives ultimately. The fittest may survive slightly longer than others, but ultimately nobody survives. So life is meant for something bigger. What is that something bigger? That is revealed in the Bhagavad Gita. So how does the small soul become a great soul? That is by linking with the great soul. By linking with the great soul. That when we see that we are parts of God and we have a part to play in God's plan for the world. Each one of us has been given certain abilities, certain interests, and we are meant to use all of them in a mood of service, in a mood of contribution. And when we do that, that is when our life gains enduring meaning. Now, the Bhagavad Gita says that, we work. Everybody has to work for a living. That is just natural. But the Gita's message is work with values. Don't just work selfishly. Don't just work greedily. Work with values. That is broadly sattva-guna living. And then we all have abilities. Work with values to create something of value. Whatever be our job, whatever be our family, role, society, work with values to create something of value and to realize what is of ultimate value. By working in the world in a mood of service, we may initially work, I want to earn money, I want to become famous. But if we maintain that attitude of service, slowly we start realizing that there is something more than money in life. Making money is important, but what we are making with money is even more important. What we are making with money. So work with values to create things of value. But as we do this in a mood of service, we start realizing slowly that, fame in this world, it's temporary. Wealth, okay, it's there, but what's more important? and gradually we'll realize that it is the Supreme Lord who is of ultimate value. And thus our vision will become directed towards Him. So the small soul becomes a great soul by understanding the greater purpose of life. And that is what the Gita provides. So Mahatmanaha, the Gita wants every one of us to become a great soul. To see that, to realize that our life is not just a chance incident. It's meant for meaning and purpose. So what we are is God's gift to us. What we become is our gift to God. What we are, it's God's gift to us. We have certain talents, certain interests. But what we do with those talents, with those interests, what we become is our gift to God. In this way, in this world, we can act in a way that our life can have enduring meaning. And that is what has happened to Arjuna. The previous verse describes how Arjuna aligned with the divine will. Karishye vachinam tava. I will do your will. Arjuna told Krishna. What does it mean? Arjuna realized, I'm not just fighting to win one war. I'm fighting to help make the world a better place in harmony with the plan of the one being who knows what is best for everyone, who wants the best for everyone. This is how the Gita infuses great meaning into the lives of each one of us. We may think, I'm doing small things. Oh, I just have this particular home and I have this particular job and nobody even knows whether I exist or not. Does anyone care? Well, yes, God cares. And everything that we do, it can have enduring significance if we do it in a mood of service. So that is his realization, that Mahatmana. Arjuna has also become a great soul because he has aligned with the divine will. And if we do that, then our life can also gain greater significance. So I'm discussing the acronym GREAT. So G is greatness. What's great about the Bhagavad Gita? This verse describes the path to greatness. It is not just achieving something wonderful in the world. That's good if we can. But it is aligning with the great soul, the greatest soul. So let's recite this verse once again. Ityaham Vasudevasya. Parthasya cha mahatmanah samvadamimam ashrausham adbhutam romaharshanam. Thank you. Let's go to the next verse. So now, he'll further describe that what has his experience been. He says, I've heard Krishna and Arjuna discuss the Bhagavad Gita, but now he says his own experience. So he says, let me explain the meaning and then we will decide the words. Vyasa Prasadat. So it is Vyasadeva was a spiritual master and Vyasadeva gave him a special blessing by which he could see the events in the Kurukshetra battlefield, although he was in Hastinapur. So Vyasa Prasadat Shrutvan. So it's interesting. What he had been given was mystical vision. It is not just vision. He is not focusing on the vision. In the Bhagavad Gita, after the Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharata war happens and that's dramatic in terms of visuals. But the Bhagavad Gita is not very dramatic visual. Just two people having a discussion. The 11th chapter is dramatic, where Krishna reveals the universal form. But what is dramatic is the hearing, the message. So Vyasa Prasadat, he is not saying drishtva, shrutva. By the mercy of Vyasadev, I heard this message, shrutva. And then what is special about it? Etad guhyam amparam. It is extremely, supremely confidential knowledge. Why is it called confidential? In one sense, the Bhagavad Gita is meant for everyone. Krishna and Arjuna discussed it publicly on the battlefield. In that sense, it's for everyone. But in another sense, when Krishna and Arjuna were discussing, they're just having a normal conversation between two people. So nobody on the battlefield could hear what they were discussing. They're just waiting, what is happening? So some people ask, what were all the warriors doing? Then Krishna and Arjuna were having this discussion. Well, actually, at least initially, as long as Bhishma was the commander, the Kauravas fought with principles. So when Bhishma saw that Krishna and Arjuna were talking something, he raised his hand, stop. And the warriors on his side stopped. And anyway, the warriors on the Pandava side had stopped. That's how they had a discussion. But nobody could hear what they were discussing. But he said, I could hear. So, Guhyam Aham Param. And he says, Yogam Yogeshwara Krishnat. That, this is the knowledge of yoga. Yoga is connection, harmony. The knowledge of connection with the divine. Yogeshwarat Krishnat. That Lord, who is the Lord of all mysticism, Yogeshwar Krishna. Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. He himself spoke this. So in the previous verse, the focus was on, this is a conversation which is thrilling. But what is thrilling about the conversation is that the main conversant or discussant, whatever the word, the interlocutor, the person who is discussing, he is not an ordinary person. It is Bhagavan, it is Krishna. Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. He himself spoke these words. So Sakshat, directly. Aksha is eyes. Sakshat is before my eyes. So it's like sense perception. I perceived it personally, he said. I pursued Krishna speaking this conversation. So, we'll discuss the theme of the acronym GREAT. We'll talk about realization in this thing, R. So, let's recite the verse now. Vyasa Prasada Shrutvan Etad Guhyam Aham Param Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishnat Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. So here he is saying that, Prabhupada writes in these purports over here, that when we practice bhakti, the practice is done under the guidance of the spiritual master, just like Vyasa Prasada. He got it by the mercy of Vyasadeva, who is like his guru. But Prabhupada also says, although bhakti is practiced through the medium of the spiritual master, the experience is direct. What that means is that each one of us has the capacity to experience God. Ultimately, we are all looking for experiences. Sometimes we think that we are all looking for pleasure. Well, yes and not exactly. If we were all looking only for pleasure, then why would horror movies be so popular? Isn't it? Literally the very name is saying it's going to horrify you. And horror and pleasure are not the same thing by any stretch of imagination. They're the opposite, you could say. So why would somebody want pay good money or bad money, whatever you want to say, pay money to go and watch a horror movie? So the point is that yes, we seek pleasure, but more than pleasure, we want experiences. We want a rich variety of experiences. A rich variety of experiences that ultimately we want them to be pleasing. But we don't just want pleasure alone. We want a deep, rich variety of experiences. And the deepest and the richest experience is the experience of God. Because why? Because he is the deepest and the richest reality. The Bhagavad Gita describes that everything attractive in the world manifests a spark of Krishna's attractiveness. Whatever it is you find attractive, some person is very beautiful, somebody is very smart, somebody is very skilled, somebody is a brilliant athlete. Different people may have different attractive things. It says all of their attractiveness is like a drop, and that drop is coming from an ocean, and that ocean is Krishna. So whatever is attractive in this world and whatever experience we get by connecting with that attractive thing, we can get all that and much, much more if we experience Krishna. And it's saying that hearing Krishna speak. He says, I personally experienced God. This is the word of God, but it is not just the Bible can also be said the word of God. But most of the Bible is not spoken by God. It is spoken about God. But this is the word of God, literally Krishna himself has spoken it. So when we recite the verses of the Gita, we can try to visualize that this same Krishna who is holding a flute to his lips, from those lips the words came out. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Become my devotee, devote yourself to me, offer your homage and obeisances to me. In this way, if you do this, I assure you, I declare, truly you will come to me. So these are words spoken by Krishna. And the words spoken by God have the potency to give us the experience of God. So we all seek some higher experience. And the highest experience is the experience of God. And what happens when we experience God, that will be described in the next verses. But here the idea is, it is not just some wise discussion. It is not just some informational discussion. It's a transformational discussion. And what is the transformation? The transformation is not just that, okay, I was doing something foolish and now I'll do something less foolish, or I'll do something intelligent. That's good. It's a good transformation. And the Bhagavad Gita can bring about that transformation. But the Bhagavad Gita can do much more. It can actually change the locus of our experience. We experience many things in this world and they give us some pleasure, some pain. But the Bhagavad Gita can give us experience of God, realization of God. So sakshat. Just the reciting the Gita can give us experience of God. So that is the realization which he's talking about over here. And in general, bhakti is a process that gives us realization, that gives us experience of God. And this experience is the greatest basis of one's faith. Like some people may say, I don't believe God exists. Okay. You know, that atheists may not believe in God. And God doesn't believe in atheists. What does that mean? God understands that their atheism is just a superficial covering on them. That they are ultimately his parts. And God is working for everyone's redemption. But ultimately, that he wants to give us experience of himself. It's not just a matter of belief. It's not just a matter of argument. He wants us to give an experience of himself. And that experience is what is done through bhakti. So when we do kirtans, when we come and behold the deities of the Lord, when we chant the holy names, and when we recite the Bhagavad Gita, if we do this with devotion, we can experience Krishna. So that's the second part. Realization of God can come through the Gita. Let's recite the verse once again. Vyasa prasada shrutvan etad guhyam aham param yogam yogeshwarat krishnat sakshat kathayata swayam. Yes, we go to the next verse. So now in the next two verses, he's giving us a glimpse of what the experience of God is like. So that realization of God, what is it like? Now he's saying, he's speaking to Dhritarashtra. Rajan, samsmritya, samsmritya. He says, I'm remembering again and again. So the commentators describe that here it's out of ecstasy that sometimes a person repeats the words. So samsmritya, samsmritya. In fact, this is the only verse. This and the next verse are the only verses in the Gita where the same word is repeated twice. There are some words that are repeated, like mana is repeated many times in the Bhagavad Gita. But here there are two words which are repeated. First is, I am remembering. Oh, Rajan, samsmritya. What am I remembering? Samvadam imam adbhutam. This wondrous conversation. K Keshavarjunayo Punyam. This conversation itself is sacred. But what is it? What is the result of remembering this conversation? Rushyami cha muhurmuhu. I am feeling thrilled. And not just once. Again and again. I am being filled with a thrilling sensation. A sensation of thrill that endures. So that is his the result of the realization. So let's recite the verse. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya. Samvadamimam adbhutam. Keshavarjunayo punyam. Rushyami cha muhurmuhu. So, in the acronym GREAT, E is ecstasy. He's experiencing ecstasy now. Now, what is happening over here? He's saying just remembering the message of the Gita is filling me with ecstasy. Just meditating on the words of Krishna is giving me a thrill. And there are many books, and some books we read, and we start thinking, why did I start reading this book also? And they're so boring, they're so contentless. Right? You just feel tired reading those books. Mm-hmm. Some books are good, and yeah, I'm happy I read the book. Some books you want to read again and again. Yeah, but some books, they don't just remain books, they become guidebooks for life. The message stays in our heart. And the Bhagavad Gita is a book like that. But it is much more than a guidebook. A guidebook is like if I have a map. You know, okay, a map is meant to guide me. When I'm driving, I use a map. But nobody falls in love with a map. A map is a guidebook. And you use it and you value it. But very few people, unless somebody is a cartographer, they don't fall in love with maps. Hmm? Even cartographers also, they fall in love, it's a question. But to consider the Gita to be a guidebook alone is to undervalue the Gita. It is definitely a guidebook, but it is much, much more than that. It is not just telling, okay, do this, don't do this, mold your life accordingly. That's what the Gita's message is. But through it, what is happening is, the words of the Gita are non-different from Krishna. In fact, especially in the Sri Vaishnava tradition, there they say that reciting the Gita is considered to be similar to reciting the names of God. It's that potent because you can get experience of God. So remembering the verses of the Bhagavad Gita is itself so uplifting that he's becoming ecstatic. And we are often told as devotees, we should remember Krishna. Prabhupada started this whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Now why Krishna Consciousness? Because of two reasons. One is that when we love Krishna, we'll naturally think about it. That is the nature of love. If we love someone, we always think about that person. But there is a speciality about Krishna that by thinking about him, we will develop love for him. So it's not necessary that most other people in the world, we think about them and we'll develop love for them. We think about them and just get tired thinking about them. But there's one comedian, he had just gone through a breakup. And he said, people pray to God for different things. Some people pray for a Ferrari, some people pray for a mansion, some people pray for this. He says, I pray for a mental off button. A mental off button. You know, our mind is just thinking about this and that and that and that. And quite often, what we think about causes us anxiety, causes dissatisfaction, causes us irritation. So now we can't have a mental off button. But what we need is that we need a satisfying object of thought. And many objects in this world, they promise us satisfaction. But eventually they leave us with dissatisfaction. But Krishna is the supremely satisfying object of thought. Even if you have not yet realized Krishna, even if you have not yet attained Krishna, just thinking about him can bring satisfaction. So, thinking about Krishna, so that's the point. So, in Bhakti tradition, it told think about Krishna. Why? Because Krishna thoughts are satisfying. Even without much from the world, we can still be satisfied. But how do we think about Krishna? Now we may say, I think about Krishna by visualizing Krishna's form. Well, that's nice if we can. But the words of Krishna, they are like a template for remembering Krishna. If we memorize a verse, if we can memorize the Sanskrit, wonderful. But even if we memorize the meaning, then say if we are disturbed about something, we are traveling in a crowded place, and there's so much noise all around, we are feeling annoyed, tired. Just meditate, just speak out the verses of the Gita. Speak out the English, speak out the Sanskrit. And that gives us a ready-made template for thinking about Krishna. A ready-made resource is there. So what has happened to Sanjay can also happen to us. If we meditate on Krishna by meditating on his words, we'll find ourselves uplifted above our situations. We'll find ourselves filled with a sense of joy, fulfillment, thrill. That is one manifestation of realization of Krishna. Let's recite this verse. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya samvadam imam adbhutam Keshavarjunayo punyam Vishyami cha muhur muhu. Go ahead, please. Now, after describing this, as he is meditating on Krishna's words, what happens is, his thoughts are naturally going to Krishna the person, the form of Krishna. So from the words, the form is manifesting. It's like if we love someone, if we think about something they said, then naturally we don't think about those words in a depersonalized context, the words floating in vacuum. Now we think about, oh, this person spoke this. So that's personalism. That personalism is, we think about what somebody has spoken, but we also think about who has spoken it. So there's a natural elevation of thoughts from the words to the source of those words. And that is what is described in this verse. Samsmriti. I am remembering again and again. What am I remembering? Rupamatyadbhutam hare. I am remembering the atyadbhutam. Earlier is the word wonderful, adbhutam, but now atyadbhutam. He is running out of superlatives. Very wonderful. Atyadbhutam hare. Very wonderful form of Hari. And what is he saying? Vismayo me mahan rajan. And I'm stunned by it. Vismit. I am dumbstruck. Vismayo. I'm stunned. I'm astounded. Vismayo me mahan rajan. I'm greatly astounded. And then again, Hushyami cha puna puna. I'm thrilled again and again. So again, two words repeated. Samsmritya, samsmritya. And earlier it was muhu muhu. Now it is puna puna. That's his ecstasy coming out. So now I'm meditating on the form of the Lord, and that is filling me with ecstasy. So let's recite the verse. Tachya samsmritya, samsmritya. Rupamatya adbhutam harehe. Vismayo me mahan rajan. Rishyami cha punha punha. So here, the Gita commentators are somewhat divided. That which form is being referred to over here? Rupam atyadbhutam harehe. I am remembering that extraordinary form of the Lord. So most Gita commentators say that this is referring to the Vishwarupa. Then in the 11th chapter, Arjuna had asked for and Krishna had shown his majestic, all-universe pervading form. It was astonishing. See, we come to a temple and we offer obeisances. We can see the deities, Lord, over here. But imagine we come to a temple and all directions there are deities. And where do we offer obeisances? So that's what happens to Arjuna. He wants to offer obeisances. He says, Namaha purastadita prushtitaste namostute sarvata eva sarva. He says, I offer you obeisances from the front, from the back, from all directions. Sahasra Kutvat Namo Namaste. He says, I offer you hundreds of obeisances. So that form was wondrous. So that's the general understanding of the Acharyas. But the Gaudiya commentators give a deeper understanding. They say that yes, the wondrous universal form that Krishna had shown was amazing. But actually, that form came from Krishna's two-handed form. It was through Krishna's two-handed form that wondrous form was revealed. So, how much more wonderful is Krishna's two-handed form? So, Sanjay is not just meditating on the universal form, he is meditating on the personal two-handed form of Krishna. Prabhupada says the universal form is great to meditate on, or rather, it's great to appreciate God's greatness. But how do you love the universal form? It's like the sky is great, but how do I love the sky? What do I do? So we need God to manifest in a form that is human-like. It's not that God is manifesting, that is God's original form. So the atyadbhutam, the adbhuta rupa is the Vishwa rupa. But the atyadbhuta rupa, the extremely wonderful form, that is the Krishna Rupa. And the test for that is, Krishna had shown Arjuna the universal form. Arjuna said, thank you, but please show me your two-handed form now. So he preferred the two-handed form. So this is, what happens is, the meditation rises more and more. So here, we take an acronym, great. So E was ecstasy, A is absorption. He's becoming absorbed in the Gita. Absorbed in Krishna, rather, not just the Gita. But so the Gita and the Krishna have a natural link. And here also there's one more important point through this, actually the Gita is demonstrating its own teachings. So we can learn how Sanjay is appreciating the Gita, and that is good. Say if we hear there is a wonderful class somewhere, but we couldn't attend the class. Now we were deciding, should I hear the recording or not? But then somebody has attended the class, they say, oh, the class was amazing, there are so many insights, such brilliant question answers. When they praise the class, then we feel inspired, oh, maybe I should hear the class. So it's like Sanjay's praise of the class, of the Bhagavad Gita class, is meant to inspire us to hear the Gita. So it's like that, the last five verses. But along with that, actually Sanjay is also demonstrating the Gita. Now how is that? See, one of the teachings of the Gita is that be detached from the fruits of your work. That when you work, whether you get success or failure, be detached. So, what happens is, Krishna speaks the Gita to Arjuna. And Krishna's speaking is successful. In the sense that Arjuna becomes enlightened. Arjuna's heart is transformed. Now Sanjay speaks the same message to Dhritarashtra. But is Dhritarashtra's heart transformed? What do you think? No. He still remains attached. So was Sanjay's speaking the Gita in vain? You could say. Sometimes we talk with somebody. Maybe somebody is an atheist and we try to talk with them and try to talk them about Krishna and God. And they say thanks, but no thanks. I'm going. We say, I failed. I couldn't succeed in changing this person's mind or heart. So Sanjay could have been despondent like that. But Sanjay is not despondent. So Sanjay in one sense is demonstrating detachment. He did his duty. His duty was to transmit the events that were happening on the battlefield. And he did that. And he is, although the words that he has spoken are not transformed Dhritarashtra, Sanjay has not become dejected by that. So Sanjay is in that sense demonstrating the Gita's lesson of detachment. Stay equipoised. However, Sanjay is demonstrating something more. Because detachment is one level of the lesson of the Gita. That is the lesson at the level of Karma Yoga. But the Gita's teachings evolve from Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. And we could say, in Bhakti Yoga, the emphasis is not on detachment. Krishna says, be detached from the fruits of your work so that you can become attached to something far bigger than the fruits of your work. I'll repeat this, be detached from the fruits of your work so that you can become attached to something far bigger than the fruits of your work. What is that something bigger? That is Krishna. So it's like, say suppose there's a super wealthy father, a billionaire, or a millionaire, billionaire, trillionaire, zillionaire, whatever is the highest. Super wealthy. And now that father wants to test his son. That how responsible is my son? He tells the son, okay, I have a supermarket, you take a job in the supermarket. And you work in the supermarket. And it's okay. Now when he's working in the supermarket, he will naturally want to try to make some sales. Maybe the father owns not just a supermarket, the entire chain of supermarkets across the world is in it. Now he's trying to make a sale. And he will try his best to make a sale. But suppose some customer is very disagreeable. And sometimes some customers, they ask for 100 products and they don't buy one. And then the person who is showing it all, they have to fix it all up and keep it all back. They may get annoyed. Now, here, this particular person, who is now the billionaire, trillionaire's son, he is also trying to make a sale. And he'll be happy if he makes a sale. But his purpose is not just to make a sale. His purpose is to please his father. If he makes a sale, he might get some commission. He might get a salary. But if he pleases his father, he'll get the entire inheritance. But if he becomes too attached to making the sale itself, and a customer doesn't take it, and he gets angry and yells at the customer, and then what will happen is, the father will think, you know, you are not mature enough. You can't handle one customer, how will you handle a business with millions of customers? So if he becomes too attached to that immediate result, he will lose the big result. So what has happened over here, what is being demonstrated, is that Sanjay is not just detached. He spoke the Gita, but that Gita did not transform Dhritarashtra's heart. However, just speaking the Gita transformed Sanjay's heart. Sanjay's heart has become enriched with remembrance of the Gita and remembrance of Krishna. And thus he's become absorbed. So in both ways, through attachment from immediate results and, sorry, detachment from immediate results and attachment to the ultimate reality. Both are being demonstrated here in the Gita. That is, Sanjay becoming enriched with absorption in Krishna. He's so absorbed that the fact that his message to Dhritarashtra didn't work doesn't matter. So similarly, when we try to share bhakti with others, we try to give books, we try to share some wisdom, sometimes others may accept, others may not accept. But if we try to do it in a mood of service, our connection with Krishna will become stronger and we will become devotionally enriched. Let's recite this verse. Tachya samsmritya samsmritya Rupam atyadbhutam hare Vismayo me mahan rajan Rishyami cha puna puna. Yeah, last verse. So now here, this is the conclusion. He's saying, yatra, where, now where, yatra can mean where, or it can also mean wherever. Yatra yogeshwara Krishna.
Yatra yogeshwara Krishna.
Okay, let me explain, then we'll recite. So wherever there is that mystical Lord Krishna, and yatra partho dhanurdhara. Wherever there is Arjuna, who is the wielder of the bow. Tatra shrir vijayo bhutir, there, there will be, Shreer is opulence, Vijay, victory, Bhuti, there will be great power, Dhruva, Nitir, Matir, Mama, and certainly there will be morality over there. This is my opinion, Matir, Mama. So here, Sanjay, in one sense, is completing the cycle of the Gita, which began with the start, first verse. First verse was, Dhritarashtra asked Sanjay, What happened in the Kurukshetra battlefield? Dharmakshetra Kurukshetra Samaveta Yutsava Mamaka Pandavaschayuva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. So, this is what happened on the battlefield. That is the question. But there is a, see, there is a, many times when people ask, there is a, how should I put it? There is a spoken question and there is an unspoken question. So if somebody comes to our home and says, have you had your lunch? That is the spoken question. The unspoken question is, can I have some lunch? Not always, but sometimes. So, when he's asking what happened, suppose somebody said, suppose there's some sports matches there, maybe baseball match or say some elections are there. So we ask, what happened? What's the news? Now we are asking for the news, but ultimately what we are asking, who won? Who lost? So that is the question which Arjuna asks, Dhritarashtra asks Sanjay. And that he is indirectly answering. He is saying, wherever there is Krishna, wherever there is Arjuna, there will be victory. He says, your sons are not going to be victorious. He's not telling him directly that, indirectly. So an indirect question merits an indirect answer. So that is the beautiful cyclicity of the Bhagavad Gita. But along with that, this last verse raises a question. The question is that in one sense we can say, wherever there is Krishna, there will be victory. Isn't it? Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. So wherever he is, there will be fortune, there will be victory. So why does this verse have to mention Arjuna? He could just have said, wherever there is God, wherever there is Krishna, that side there will be victory. So why does this verse mention Arjuna over it? And that is the key significance. That the purpose of the Gita is not just to proclaim God's position. That God is great, wherever God is, there will be victory. The purpose of the Gita is to transform man's disposition. Man, human disposition, we can say. So the Krishna could have won the war by himself. He did not need Arjuna. But he wanted Arjuna to be a part. And this verse contains the word Dhanurdharaha. Dhanurdharaha means Arjuna has picked up his bow in readiness to fight. So earlier, at the start of the Gita, Arjuna had put his bow down in dejection, in confusion. And now he has picked up his bow. So the purpose of the Gita is to demonstrate how by hearing the Gita, the human will is aligned with the divine will. And the human who aligns with the divine will be victorious. That is the point of the Gita. So the Gita is meant to transform human disposition, to inspire the human will to align with the divine will. And that is the last part of the great acronym, G-R-E-A-T, T is transformation. The transformation of the human will. We all may be discouraged in life, we may be confused, we may be angry, frustrated, resentful, whatever emotions might come in our life. But, if we hear the Gita, we all can be transformed. So what happens is, that Arjuna's Gandiva bow can be said to represent our enthusiasm, our determination. Sometimes life's challenges, life's troubles may just dishearten us. I quit, I give up, I can't do it. But if we hear the Gita, we all will be inspired to pick up our Gandiva bow. We will all be filled with enthusiasm, with determination. Yes, there are many problems in the world, but in spite of whatever problems are there, God's will is still working. God's plan is still operational. No matter how big problems are, God is still bigger. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does not promise a stormless sea. But he does provide an unsinkable ship. He does not promise a stormless sea. Storms are within Arjuna's life. But if you understand that if we align with Krishna's will, no matter how many difficulties come, ultimately our life's mission will be successful. our not just life's mission, our multi-life journey will be triumphant. That is the assurance that the Gita gives, and that is the conviction that comes in the heart of one who studies the Gita. And that is the ultimate transformation that we all can have. That we can be enthused, we can be energized, we can become determined, and we can all fulfill our God-given potentials in this world and beyond. So let's recite this verse. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishno, Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara, Tatra Shri Vijayo Bhuti, Dhruvani Tirmatir Mama. So I'll summarize. I spoke today on the topic of what's so great about the Gita, based on the acronym GREAT, appreciating Sanjay's Gita from the Sanjay's perspective. Does anyone remember what was G? Greatness. Yeah. The small soul can become a great soul, Mahatma, and that small soul aligns with the great soul. Our life is not meaningless, it has great meaning if we see our existence as a part of the Lord's plan. So what we are is God's gift to us, what we become is our gift to God. That is the first verse, 1874. Then 1875, R was?
Realization.
No, the Gita doesn't just tell us that God has a higher plan. The Gita's message, the Gita's words have the potency to give us experience of God. And that experience is so fulfilling. We all seek different experiences, but this experience is so fulfilling that all other attractive experiences, they become like drops in front of the ocean of experience that is God. Then, that was 1875. Then E is ecstasy. So, by meditating on the words of Krishna, just by speaking the Gita, what happens is, Sanjay becomes thrilled in remembering the Gita. Prishyamichi, muhur muhu, puna puna, samsmriti samsmriti, those words come out. So we all can become filled with ecstasy just by remembering the words of the Gita. So the words of the Gita are like a template, a ready-made template for remembering Krishna. Then the next was, 77, absorption. So not just there is ecstasy in remembering the words of the Gita, but from the words of the Gita, the form of Krishna manifests. And remembering that form is extremely enriching and absorbing. And last T was?
Transformation.
The purpose of the Gita is to transform human disposition, to fill us with the inspiration that no matter how many difficult, how many storms come on the sea that we are in, we have an unsinkable ship. That unsinkable ship is our readiness to serve God, our willingness to take up our bow and enthusiastically, diligently try to serve God in whatever situation we are in. And that way, our life's mission will be ultimately supremely successful. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Do we have time for only one question? We have time? Yes, please. You can ask, I'll repeat.
I was asked by one of the congregation members, since you talked about Sanjay here, did you come across the question, who was this Sanjay in the previous life?
Okay. Who was Sanjay in his previous life? But in general, the Bhagavad Gita's focus is not so much on who was who in previous life. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about Sanjay's previous life. Okay, thank you. So, okay. Yes, please.
Hi Krishna, thank you so much for that class. I'm feeling really inspired to read Bhagavad Gita, and I was thinking how Sanjay's, those last five verses are like a testimonial, like a reviews, we like book reviews and things that will inspire us to want to read the book. And so when we get to the end, we read that, we're like, oh, now I want to start again. So it's kind of a nice package in the Bhagavad Gita.
Thank you. Beautiful testimonial. Yes.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. So, Prabhu, we talked about alignment with the will of the God. So how do we make these choices, you know, in our life we have to face day in, day out? And, you know, the overall answer, we always get that, you know, whatever is conducive to our Krishna consciousness, our choices should be for that. But sometimes it's not that easy to understand what is, you know, conducive even. So how do we, where is the checkpoint and what should we?
Yes, that's a big question. I was expecting that in some ways. How do we align with the will of the Lord? Well, I would say three parts to the answer. I'll try to keep it brief. The first is that where the will of God is known for us, we try to do that. That means, say for example, we do know that we should practice bhakti. You know, we should do our sadhana, we should study scriptures, come in the association of devotees. That is clear. And there are also certain activities which we know are anti-devotional, immoral, we should try to avoid. Now it's possible that we may not have the willpower at present to do all those things. But at least what we know is God's will and what we can do, we should do. Because ultimately Krishna is in our heart. And if He sees that we want to do His will, He will reveal His will more and more to us. Tesham satata yuktana bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mama piyantite. And so I start with what we know we should be doing. So one definition of intelligence is to know what to do when we don't know what to do. So I don't know what to do in this situation. So what do? I turn and pray. This is what I need. I need guidance. Now it's not necessary that suddenly some flash of lightning will come and we'll know. But we are at least in that area doing the right thing. So the second part is that in general, God's will is not like one line. It's an overall direction. It's not that Krishna wants us to be like robots. This is what you do, otherwise you condemn. No, it is He who has given us our individuality. And He wants us to use our individuality. So our intelligence, our individuality, we use it. In the spiritual world, when the gopis cook for Krishna, at one level, sometimes is it that Krishna reveals from within their hearts what I want to eat today? The gopis desire, you know, I want to cook this for Krishna today. And they cook it wonderfully, Krishna likes it. So there's a reciprocation of love. So it's not that, you know, if I don't do this, oh, then my life is doomed because I didn't do Krishna's will. No, Krishna's will is a direction. And sometimes even if we go off direction, as long as we try to realign with Krishna, we'll come back. So we shouldn't lament too much if we don't know Krishna's will or if we do something else. It's like if we are using the GPS and the GPS says turn right. And then we somehow we don't hear or we don't understand, we turn left. What does the GPS do? You didn't obey me, get lost. No, GPS doesn't do that. Immediately reroutes. Reroutes and again shows the right track. So even if we go off track sometimes, it's not like one line, if we don't go on, we are doomed forever. No. Krishna will guide us from wherever we are following. And the third part is that we can say God's will is what is best for us. That when we do God's will, that is what is best for us. But also we can say God's will is in what is best for us. That means we use our God-given intelligence and we try to understand what is the good thing to do in this situation. So in the Mahabharata, when Abhimanyu is killed, Arjuna is shattered. And Arjuna lashes out in anger at his own brothers. He says, couldn't you protect my son? Are all your weapons just ornaments? At that time, Krishna approaches Arjuna and he hugs him from the side and he says, oh Arjuna, in this world, adversities befall everyone. The good people and the bad people, the wise people and the unwise people. But what differentiates the two is that the wise people act in ways that decrease the suffering, whereas the unwise people act in ways that increase the suffering. So, oh Arjuna, look around you. Your brothers are suffering just the way you are suffering. They also loved Abhimanyu. Pray, Arjuna, don't speak words that will increase their pain. So ultimately, Krishna is the well-wisher of everyone. Krishna wants everything to be better. So whatever situation we are in, we think, what can I do to make things better in this situation? So if we say, I don't know what to make things better. Well, okay. Two choices are there for me. One step forward. What can I do, something which will make things better? You know, if we are having a tough relationship and a harsh altercation in that relationship, what will make things better? Well, if the other person is yelling, I yell back. That's not going to make things better. So let me try to calm down. So just think, in that sense, service attitude doesn't have to mean something mystical or otherworldly. Like you said, it's what is favorable for our Krishna consciousness. But ultimately, if our material life is better organized, more stable, that is favorable for our Krishna consciousness. So just ask yourself, what can I do to make things better? And don't think sometimes in too much long term, because we can't think. Okay, in the next 1 hour, if I were to act my best self, what would my best self do? There are a dozen problems, dozen things to do, and I don't know how to deal with them. But if I were my best self, in the next 1 hour, what would my best self do? Okay, maybe I'll just note down things, 1, 2, 3, and I'll do these things. I'll put other things aside. So just small things if we do like that. That is also actually doing God's will. Because whatever resources God has given us, He wants us to use them. So imagine if some billionaire father gives their child a very expensive computer on which they can do graphic design or something like that. And then the child is asking the parents, what can I do to please you? So I gave you a gift, use it. See, that will please me, isn't it? So God has given us some abilities, some interests, some talents. Just using them will please Him. Using them constructively will please Him. So in this way, three things. First is, where we know God's will, do it. Where we know what is the right thing to do. Second is, that don't lament too much if you don't know God's will. Because God's will is not a line, it's a direction. Even if we go off track, He'll bring us back. And just ask the question, what can I do to make things better? And take, what can I do to make things better? And take small steps accordingly. Okay? So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Just a quick announcement. Much of what I spoke today is from my book, Relishing Bhagavad Gita. I wrote 2 books recently on the Bhagavad Gita, Relishing Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita Insights. Both those books are available, and also a calendar with around 365 quotes based on the Bhagavad Gita is also available over there in the book table. If any of you would like to have that, we have a few copies still remaining. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.